Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 120. I'm your host, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is this week's special guest co-host, straight from the hit fighting game ARMS, Spring Man.
Hey, hey, hey!
And we are back, of course, to discuss what's been going on in the world of Nintendo. We have a little bit of news to talk about, we have some game impressions, but the main focus of this episode is our big topic, which is the 2017 year in review. And by that, I mean a countdown of the top five games released on Nintendo systems. But first of all, there's some exciting news to talk about, and that is Nintendo Power has returned.
Oh yeah!
That's right. Nearly 5 years after the magazine shut down, Nintendo Power is back, and now it's a podcast. The first episode went live on December 20th, and given my history with the magazine, many people have been asking me what I think of it. And honestly, I think it's off to a pretty good start. It's hosted by former Nintendo Power editor-in-chief and former Power Pros co-host Chris Slate, and in the inaugural episode, he discusses some of the Nintendo highlights of the year and conducts a behind-the-scenes interview with Eiji Inuma and Hidemaro Fujibayashi, the producer and director of The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. Obviously, it's a little weird for Power Pros since we were sort of the unofficial podcast carrying on the legacy of Nintendo Power, and now this has appeared, but the way I see it, we're sort of flip sides to the same coin. This new Nintendo Power podcast has some cool access and behind-the-scenes stuff you're not likely to get anywhere else, but on the other hand, judging by this first episode, there might not be a lot of news and views like we do here, and as an official Nintendo podcast, I don't imagine there's going to be a whole lot of criticism. We were lucky with the magazine that we had free rein to be critical in our reviews, but I don't know how much of that will be in this new podcast. So to me, I feel like we're both carrying on the Nintendo Power tradition in different ways. Power Pros has news, impressions, and a feature each week, and this new Nintendo Power podcast has interviews and the straight-from-the-source content that Nintendo Power was known for.
Nice!
At any rate, it's cool to see Nintendo Power revived as something more than a brand on random Twitter posts, and the podcast is clearly just getting started, so it'll be interesting to see how it evolves from here. Of course, I've seen a lot of comments from folks saying they think I should be on the Nintendo Power podcast, and Nintendo is taking comments at the Nintendo Power podcast at noa.nintendo.com, so maybe you can politely drop them a line and let them know what you want to see on the show.
Bada-bing!
Next up, impressions of Arcade Archives versus Super Mario Bros. For Switch. On the last episode, we talked about the possibility of versus Super Mario Bros. Arriving on Switch in the very near future, and indeed, it has.
Woohoo!
Surprisingly, it got very little fanfare from Nintendo on their social accounts or in the press release, but it is out now and is in the eShop for $8, and since there's no virtual console on Switch, it is currently the only way to play Super Mario Bros. On the system. More importantly, it's the first time you've ever been able to play this version, the arcade version of Super Mario Bros., at home. And it's kind of weird, because a lot of it is like Super Mario Bros. On the NES, but the bits that are different can really come as a shock. It's almost like an alternate reality version of Super Mario Bros. It has a lot of subtle changes, like Mario turns yellow when he grabs a fire flower instead of white, and some enemy placement is different. Sometimes you'll go to hit a block expecting something and nothing comes out, or maybe you'll get a power-up instead of a one-up, or maybe there are little pits where you don't expect them to be, or a block is missing somewhere compared to where it usually is on the NES version.
Huh?
Yeah, it is a little bit surprising. And then some changes aren't nearly as subtle, like you can't warp any further than World 6, and certain stages are way tougher with smaller platforms or more enemies, and in some cases the levels have been totally replaced, like 1-4 and 3-2 are totally different. Now, I haven't played the Lost levels in a long time, but apparently these levels originally came from that game, the Japanese version of Super Mario Bros. 2. Also, the timer seems to be way faster than it was in the NES version, so even the stages that haven't changed are significantly tougher. So if you think you know Super Mario Bros., this provides a notably different and new experience. Like most of the Arcade Archives games, it includes numerous difficulty adjustment options, and it has time trial modes in addition to the regular game, as well as a handful of graphic filters. Ultimately, this is Super Mario Bros., it's a timeless classic, and this version lets you play it as you've possibly never played it before, so if you are a hardcore Nintendo fan, this is absolutely a must-have game.
Yeah!
Now, I know we're only a few minutes into the show, but this is kind of a short episode this week, and Springman really hasn't been talking as much as I was expecting, so let's take a little intermission, and then when we come back, we'll discuss this week's big topic, the best games of 2017. All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is the best games on Nintendo systems in 2017.
Oh, yeah!
We're going to keep things simple with a top five list that combines both Nintendo 3DS and the Switch, but it's been sort of a tricky year. We've had a brand new game system, we've had lots of fantastic first-party titles, and we've also had some amazing third-party support, especially from indies. We've also had a lot of ports, which I'm really not counting when it comes to considering the best games of the year. Games like Cave Story Plus and Mario Kart 8 Deluxe and Axiom Verge and Apollo Justice Ace Attorney are all fantastic games, but I wouldn't say they're the best games of 2017. I would consider them like the best games of 2014 or 2016 or whenever they came out. And it's great to have them in new forms, but I just can't consider them among my top games for 2017. On the other hand, something that's a complete remake, like Mario & Luigi Superstar Saga on 3DS, I would totally count it, because it's not the same game that we got way back on the Game Boy Advance. Also, I should say that my co-hosts and I have obviously not been able to play through everything, so it's always possible we missed some amazing hidden gem. However, with all that said, here is the Power Pros Podcast Top 5 Games of 2017. And first of all, coming in at number 5, we have Shovel Knight, Spectre of Torment.
Yeah!
This is a fantastic 2D action platformer. It is really a full-on prequel to Shovel Knight, even if it is, you know, available as DLC. Of course, it is also available standalone. But playing as Spectre Knight is just really, really fun. It has great gameplay mechanics, you know, climbing walls and wall jumping, grinding on rails, and using the aerial slash like a grapple maneuver are all just really, really satisfying. I thought it was a big step up over the overly complex controls of Plague Knight's campaign. Also, it is tons of fun from a story perspective, letting you recruit the members of the Order of No Quarter and experience flashback scenes from Spectre Knight's past. Of course, it looks great with spectacular 3D on the 3DS, it has excellent music, and overall, it's just a really polished game. I cannot wait to see what the guys at Yacht Club Games do with King of Cards when it comes out in 2018, and I'm also really looking forward to a physical release of this game on Switch. In fact, recently on Twitter, I asked Yacht Club Games if we could be looking forward to that sometime soon, and they strongly hinted that a physical version was in the cards, so to speak, after the King Knight campaign comes out, probably so they can release it as an all-in-one package. Moving on then to number 4, we have Sonic Mania.
Woohoo!
This is another retro-style 2D pixel art platformer, but this time it is obviously starring Sonic the Hedgehog. The developer's love of the classic 2D Sonic games clearly shines through, and this really does feel like an old-school Sonic game with super speed, like senses overloading, ridiculously flashy visuals, and of course the ever-important platforming elements to break up just the pure, straightforward running. It has a great variety in the levels, including both new levels and remix stages from the past, plus some familiar-feeling bonus stages, and lots of nods to past Sonic games. It also includes multiple playable characters with Tails and Knuckles in there as well as Sonic, plus it's a pretty good length and a solid challenge. Of course, this is not the only Sonic game to hit this year, but honestly, it's not even close. It is night and day. I didn't dislike Sonic Forces like a lot of people did, but Sonic Mania nails pretty much everything that I love about Sonic the Hedgehog and everything that has made the series great. So I have no qualms about calling this one of the best games of the entire year. Next, coming in at number 3, we have Metroid: Samus Returns for the Nintendo 3DS.
Yes!
Now, I'm kind of starting to realize this is sounding like a trend here, but yes, we have another excellent retro revival on our hands here. Unlike the last two games I discussed, this is a modernized remake of a nearly forgotten classic, and it's been thoroughly updated and upgraded so you might barely recognize it as a remake. But more importantly, it brings back the tried and true side-scrolling Metroid gameplay, which we haven't seen in years and years, and it does so by reinventing probably the weakest game in the series. It uses the same basic premise as Metroid 2, but improves upon it in almost every way with new bosses, an expanded map, new weapons, and some of the best stereoscopic 3D on the 3DS. I also really appreciate them not just giving us the same old Metroid, but actually taking some risks with some new elements like the Aether abilities and the counter system. And so the result is something that isn't exactly Metroid as we expected it or remember it, but it's a fine mix of old and new, and it's hopefully something that could be used as a springboard for a new generation of Metroid games. So thumbs up to Nintendo and thumbs up to Mercury Steam for what I consider a successful Metroid revival. Now then, that brings us to the last two titles. And the big question is, what is number 1 and what is number 2? And I think we can all agree that the answer is...
Spring Man!
No.
Springtime!
No.
Spring to the top!
That doesn't even make sense. You're not a game, you're just a character.
I'm the best!
I said no. Knock it off.
Oh, man!
And sorry, but it's not ARMS either.
Gah!
Anyway, as I was saying, that brings us to number 1 and number 2, which are not only two of the year's best games, but perhaps two of Nintendo's best games ever. The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild and Super Mario Odyssey. And honestly, it's very hard to decide which one to call Game of the Year, because both of them are just so darn good.
Yeah, baby!
So let's break it down and compare the games in a few categories, starting with innovation. For me, Breath of the Wild really was a breath of fresh air. I love the past formulaic Zelda games, but I love the fact that this one throws all that out for a wide open world and the thrill of discovery. Even after putting in more than 140 hours, I am still discovering new things and setting foot on new locations I just actually haven't been to before. From the shrines, to the breakable weapons, to the wide variety of outfits, to the rune powers, to the champion abilities, this really took Zelda in a spectacular new direction. And perhaps most important of all was the fact that you really do have a ton of freedom in many instances to come up with your own solutions to the challenges that are before you.
Yeah!
Super Mario Odyssey, on the other hand, introduced Cappy and the capture mechanic, which add a whole new dimension to Mario games. No more power-up costumes, no more Super Mushrooms in this title. Instead, you can take control of, you know, almost everything from a Goomba to a Tyrannosaurus Rex, and pretty much all of it is awesome. However, you know, comparing the two, I would say that where Mario is concerned, it is more of an evolution of the formula, whereas the gameplay in Zelda is more of a revolution. And speaking of the gameplay specifically, it's really hard to say which title has the edge here. On a basic level, Breath of the Wild is heavily inspired by what came before in terms of combat with lock-on targeting and mixing swordsmanship with bows and other tools, but this game really let you play like you wanted. You could buff up with potions and healing items and fight the enemies head-on, or you could use the environment to your advantage, or you could go all stealthy with sneak attacks. Ultimately, I kind of found that the survival aspects of the game, such as the breaking weapons, the limited arrows, and cooking food, made me a rather cautious player, and while it was still really fun, it wasn't always as satisfying as facing enemies head-on, although it definitely was more effective. Of course, there are no such concerns in Super Mario Odyssey. You have your full arsenal of famous Mario moves essentially right from the get-go, and whether you're stomping enemies or clobbering them with your hat or leaping through the air with a triple jump or possessing an enemy, it is always very, very rewarding. Odyssey basically takes that famous Mario platforming and expands and polishes it to perfection.
Boom!
And then there's so much fun stuff to do in Super Mario Odyssey. It seems like you can't take a few steps without seeing some new Power Moon to collect. And, you know, maybe you're completing a platforming challenge, or solving some puzzle, or planting a seed, or jumping rope, or performing a fetch quest, or just exploring some out-of-the-way location. There's just so much to do and so much variety, and the worlds are just densely packed with fantastic objectives. But Breath of the Wild, you know, along those same lines, it has tons to do as well. It has shrine quests, side quests, optional enemies to fight, tons of Korok seeds, only the world is much bigger and way more expansive than Mario's game. So both games are really the embodiment of the phrase, you know, begs to be explored, which is something I like to say a lot. But, you know, if I had to pick one over the other, I guess I'm kind of leaning towards Mario, just because seemingly every inch of every stage is built for fun. But then you can turn it around and say, well, Breath of the Wild has this amazing world and atmosphere that Odyssey just can't touch. And that's not really a knock on Odyssey, because that's not the type of game it is. But Breath of the Wild really does an amazing job crafting this vast, believable, unified world. It's filled with deserts and mountains and forests and these towers that pierce the heavens. It has believable cities and multiple races of inhabitants, and just gives you this stunning sense of history. And sure, Odyssey creates some amazing worlds too, and in my opinion, it even adds more of a worthwhile story than any previous Mario platformer. It even introduces a very special, unique type of atmosphere where New Donk City is concerned. Ultimately, though, it's a vast playground, not really a believable world, and you know, when you compare those two, it's like, can you say that one is actually better than the other? From a graphic standpoint, I kind of feel like it's a toss-up as well. Both games look phenomenal and play to their strengths. Zelda has these awesome vistas and sweeping landscapes, and Mario is just bursting with color and visual energy. I will say that probably my very favorite single gaming moment of 2017 is from Breath of the Wild, and a big part of that is because of the visuals. And it was when I climbed the mountains in the Faron region and was looking down into the lakes and jungles below, and I saw this majestic dragon soaring through the sky just as the sun was coming up, and it looked amazing, and it just couldn't have happened without mind-blowing visuals. But there's also a lot to be said about how impressive Bowser looks in a tux, and the fact that I can almost feel the spray on my face in Fossil Falls and the sand in my boots in Tossed Arena. So suffice to say, that game has spectacular visuals as well. Musically, on the other hand, it is no contest. I guess there's something to be said about Breath of the Wild's minimalist approach, but I kind of prefer my games with a full-on musical accompaniment. Odyssey's soundtrack is creative, possibly you might even say risky, with a wide variety of styles, and it makes the game feel as epic as its title implies. And no matter what you think of the big band Jump Up Superstar number, you've got to admit it made a lot of people jump up and take notice. Meanwhile, you know, my biggest musical memories associated with Breath of the Wild are the tunes that play when a guardian sees you, or the blood moon appears, which mostly just has the effect of putting me on edge and raising my blood pressure. Control-wise, both games are excellent, although Odyssey's reliance on motion controls for a few of the moves, I think, gives Breath of the Wild the edge. And when it comes to game length and replay value, again, it's pretty much a toss-up. As I said, I put in over 140 hours on Breath of the Wild, and I still have like 600 Korok seeds to find, and there's a bunch of high-level equipment upgrades I could still do. Meanwhile, I haven't spent nearly as much time in Super Mario Odyssey, but I know I have lots of extra moons hidden in each kingdom that I have yet to acquire, and I cannot wait to track them all down. So with all that on the table, where does that leave us? Are we any closer to deciding which one is better? Which is worthy of being called number one? Both games are amazing, and you know, it could really go either way, but as I've gone through all this and I've said it all out loud, I kind of go back to my comment earlier about every single inch of Super Mario Odyssey being built for maximum fun. There is just no filler. It is just densely packed platforming awesomeness at every turn. Am I looking forward to going back for more Power Moons or more Korok seeds? And when I think of it that way, I just know the answer is the moons. I love Breath of the Wild, but Mario Odyssey just has a special magic to it that I think puts it just a step above. So I am calling this one for Mario.
Champion!
So there we go. Super Mario Odyssey number one, Breath of the Wild number two for the Power Pros Game of the Year. That leaves Metroid Samus Returns at number 3, Sonic Mania at number 4, and Shovel Knight Plague of Shadows coming in 5th.
Kaboom!
And with that said, I do believe this brings this rather abbreviated episode of Power Pros to a close. Although, you know, I'm pretty sure we do have time for one more thing, and that would be a dramatic reading. In fact, because this episode is so short, I think it might even be a double-sized grand finale of Captain Nintendo from the pages of Nintendo Power magazine. Previously, an explosion at Nintendo headquarters turned Brett Randles into Captain Nintendo, but also caused Ganon and the Mother Brain to come to life in the real world. After a lengthy battle that involved Captain Nintendo teaming up with Link from The Legend of Zelda, the Captain stabbed Ganon with a silver letter opener. And now, the saga continues. Ganon roared in incredible pain and began to flash in and out of visibility. Cap could hear shrieks coming from inside the building. The Mother Brain was feeling the pain as well, since she was directly supplying Ganon's life support. Suddenly, Ganon froze motionless and then evaporated as though he were being beamed away. The letter opener hung in mid-air for a second and then dropped to the ground. Captain Nintendo looked through the tinted glass and saw the diabolic Mother Brain shimmer and slowly fade from sight, leaving only a quickly dissipating black smoke behind. "Well," said Cap, turning toward Link, who by now had risen to his feet. "What is there to say but thank you, my friend?" He stretched out his hand to the fabled adventurer. As the heroic duo stood shaking hands, Link smiled and spoke the only words Captain Nintendo had heard him declare. "I like the boots, but on the chest I'd put..." And then Link faded back to continue his adventure in Hyrule on the game counselor's monitor. Inside, an anxious trio greeted Brett as he re-entered the building. Cap waved them off, however, and approached the PC. "Emerald, is the Mother Brain gone?" he asked. "Well, yes and no," started Emerald. "Emerald," said a very tired Brett, "one day I'm going to fry your ROM." "Okay, I'm hip. The Mother Brain is in a dormant suspension phase, what we would call hibernating, until she can store up enough mental energy to resume her plan. There's no way to determine how long she'll be gone. Might be centuries, might be just a few seconds." "What exactly is her plan?" asked Cap. "Recall her programming, Brett. The Mother Brain is programmed to attempt world domination." "I had to ask," groaned Captain Nintendo. "Well, with that happy thought, I must be getting back to my desk. I'm way past my break time," said Max, and promptly departed. "What a day," sighed Captain Nintendo as he returned the letter opener to Morgana. "Brett, what was it you were going to ask me just before all this began?" asked Terra. "Huh, oh, well, I just wondered if you'd like to go out with me." "There, I said it," said Brett, like a heavy burden had just been lifted. "Well, that's sweet, Brett," said Terra with a strange glint in her eye, "but I really try not to date the people I work with, you know. Thanks anyway." Terra proceeded down the hall as Brett watched her, scratching his head. Turning, he smiled at Morgana, and then lumbered outside where he searched the air with his eyes. He reflected on how his life and purpose had changed so drastically in such a short time, and then he spoke. "If you can hear me, Mother Brain, listen well. You will not succeed. For wherever there is an injustice to be rectified, a person in need of rescue, or a quest to be taken up, there also will you find the power of Nintendo, and it will always triumph, I promise." And there you go. At long last, that concludes the adventures of Captain Nintendo. Mother Brain is defeated, Link has gone home, and Brett may or may not need to take harassment training. For some reason, there were no more Captain Nintendo tales after this one. Who can really say why?
Come on!
But, of course, much of the idea did live on in Captain N the Game Master, which was equally horrible in its own special way, and did indeed feature the return of Mother Brain. Springman, you got anything to add?
Ew.
I think that really says it all. Well, that's it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at powerprospod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, or you can drop us an email at powerprospod@gmail.com. And of course, if you like the podcast, it would be great if you told your friends about us. Thanks for listening, everybody, and Happy New Year. For myself and my co-host Springman,
bye-bye!
We will see you next time.